ago, Rabbi Kahn approached me about speaking about teenagers, kids, and Shabbos. And I don't really like to say no to Rabbi Kahn because he works around the clock and he is just a wonderful, wonderful young leader. But I said no because I said I have no idea what to tell anyone. Kids and Shabbos, I actually remarked at the time that I'd very much like to attend a session on making Shabbos meaningful for children. But after several weeks of him insisting, I agreed on the following condition, that I would do research. I would do research. That I wouldn't necessarily be coming with ideas of my own, certainly not ideas that I've been able to necessarily, when my kids were younger, to implement. But to try to reach out to individuals who do seem to have a sense and to put something together. That's something that I thought I could do, is put a presentation together. You want me to write a research report, I'll do a research report. So I want to thank many of the people that spent quite a lot of time. I had the good fortune not just of speaking to Dr. Pelkovitz at length, but having spoken in the Young Israel Great Neck this Shabbos. I stayed by the Pelkovitzes. So a lot of Dr. Pelkovitz's research, Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, Rabbi Herschel Schachter and his wife, many of the Rashi Yeshiva. This is really a joint effort to try to put pieces together to deal with what is really a very difficult topic. How do we make Shabbos meaningful for our children? I'm going to focus primarily on teenagers, being that we're an MTA. But I'm going to speak about young children as well. I think the challenge becomes even more difficult with teenagers. And there's been much written about teenagers and half Shabbos and texting on Shabbos and all these kinds of things. So I will try to focus mostly on that. I think the first question we have to ask ourselves is, what makes Shabbos meaningful for us? What makes Shabbos meaningful for us? Very often, you know, we run into very well-meaning parents. I know certainly as a shul rabbi, as an educator, very, very well-meaning parents who want something for their children that they themselves don't necessarily have or aren't necessarily willing to work for. When it comes to Shabbos, which is an experience so much more than going through the motions, Shabbos, which is about an inner world and an inner feeling, it's incredibly difficult to give something to our children or to expect something from our children that we don't have ourselves. And I think the first thing that we need to ask ourselves, and sometimes we take this for granted, is why do we enjoy Shabbos? Why do we feel that we need a Shabbos every 7 days? What is it about Shabbos that we couldn't do without? It's so interesting when one speaks to those who are unaffiliated, unobservant, and Shabbos seems like something which is so restrictive and so difficult. How could anybody do that for 25 hours? And yet for people who do experience Shabbos, it's something that we can't do without. But why? Have we ever sat around and thought about what Shabbos means to us? And then, even more importantly, have we ever actually sat down and explained that to our children? It's a question that I think we can ask about Yiddishkeit in general. What would our lives be like without Yiddishkeit? What would we have without the traditions? How much of what is important in our life is somehow connected to Judaism? And do we ever stop and think about that? Do we ever, once we have answers, do we find ways to express that to our children? Some of the most meaningful things we can ever say to our children are expressions of the extent to which we love and enjoy Judaism. And if there are areas that we don't, and our children can pick up more easily, but certainly easily, what we don't enjoy than what we do enjoy, how do we try to find meaning in that way? There's a famous comment made by Rav Moshe Feinstein talking about the generation following those who came to America. Those who came to America in the immigrations in the 1890s through the early 1900s and would do anything for Shabbos. Anything for Shabbos. It's a generation who survived things that it's difficult for us to imagine, literally what it means to get laid off every single Friday or every single Sunday when they didn't come back for work on Shabbos. And so many of them had their own children decide not to keep Shabbos. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, not in any way taking away from that generation, because it was a generation of greats. They went through so much. He said, how did that happen? And he said, it's very simple. The children saw them suffering for Shabbos. They heard from their parents the difficulty of Shabbos, how difficult it was. And it was difficult. And they were brave. But not everyone wants to be brave. Not everybody wants to be brave. And especially in a time when everything is a choice, the fact that we have to keep Yiddishkeit is not going to be as powerful as that we want to keep Yiddishkeit. And even things that resonate to the generations who are here before me, the idea that, of course, the Ribono Shel Olam says you got to do it, and for generations, for thousands of years, if people have done this, how dare we decide to suddenly not do it? That's not this generation. It doesn't mean we sugarcoat Judaism. It doesn't mean we make it into something that it isn't. It doesn't mean that we say that the struggle isn't valuable. But there's a difference between saying that the struggle is valuable and meaningful. In fact, it's what gives my life meaning, than saying it's just difficult. There's a difference between saying it's very difficult to take off for Shabbos and saying it's very difficult to take off for Shabbos, but because I get to sit with you, it's all worth it. Those two statements are literally two ends of a spectrum in terms of being able to try to transmit something to the next generation. So one of the things I think that we have to ask is, what is it that we appreciate? What do we look forward to Shabbos? What is it about Shabbos that is special? If we don't have that answer, then we have the number one challenge. Right? When we talk about transmitting Torah to our children, we say in the Birchas HaTorah, V'harevna, V'harevna, make the Torah sweet. And then we pray that it should be passed down to our children. If it's sweet to us, if it's something we enjoy, if it's meaningful to us, then it's something our children will want to do. And I know that we all think that our teenagers want to do exactly the opposite and be exactly the opposite of what we are. But it is simply untrue. Study after study after study, and we'll go through some of them, show that teenagers, despite the fact that they have a need to, and it's a healthy need, to form distance from their parents, to be independent, deep down, their parents are their heroes. Deep down, it's their parents they're looking to. There is no one else more important in their lives. So we have to ask ourselves these things. We have to be on fire. We have to say, what do we look forward to? Why do we keep Shabbos? Why do we observe Shabbos? Some of that actually begins before Shabbos starts. Before Shabbos starts. And that's, we're not even thinking about Shabbos yet. Sometimes before Shabbos starts, we're thinking about just getting into Shabbos, but not the attitude about the fact that Shabbos is coming. Erev Shabbos is a key time. And by the way, the fact that we're not talking to our kids on Erev Shabbos, they're just watching what goes on, because we're too busy to talk to them then. Halavai, we should have time to talk to them on Shabbos. But the fact that they observe, even children that are not so observant are very observant. And they may not be so observant because they're very observant. What happens on Erev Shabbos is something key. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in a famous talk, talked about the fact that America has people who keep Shabbos, but they don't have Erev Shabbos Jews. Erev Shabbos Jews. What is Shabbos when it comes in? What is it? Is it something that I long for? Is it something that I'm preparing for? Or is it something that gets in the way of my schedule and my week? And by the way, it could be both, but we only let on one. It could be that really deep down we're still looking forward to Shabbos, but when it comes, is it an imposition? What happens in our home when Shabbos comes? Is Shabbos the descent into chaos? Or Erev Shabbos the descent into chaos? Or is it a peace that's coming? It is so difficult. It is so easy on one hand, me as a Jewish educator, who sometimes has the liberty, if need be, to take off on Erev Shabbos and speak about coming into Shabbos calmly. For 20 years I was a shul rabbi, so I know what it means not to come into shul calmly, into Shabbos calmly. But the difference that that time makes, the descent into Shabbos, is it something that we look forward to? Is it something that we plan for? We have to ask ourselves, what is the meaning today for Shabbos? It's interesting that in the modern world, and what I'm going to say is, as with everything else I'm saying, I hope I see a lot of people nodding their head. This is all simple. It's just really a reminder. Shabbos is so much more necessary in 2017 than it was in 2015. Never mind when it was first created. Never mind when HaKadosh Baruch Hu put this idea into the world. And we have to remind ourselves of what that means and what that's about. There was, when I was growing up, there was an interesting commercial on ABC, probably ABC New York, or WABC on the TV, where they would talk about the value of once a week eating dinner with your kids. This was like a big commercial. They had this big chiddush that if you eat dinner once a week with your kids, that it's going to make a big difference in their future. Right? And I remember speaking for years at that point about the fact that they're just basically advertising Shabbos. Do you know that when they've done studies of kids who have developed drug problems and other problems, there is a close link. Of course, there are many reasons why these things happen. There's a close link to, the number of times a week that a parent eats dinner with a child and that child's future. Maybe one of the greatest indicators of the success of the child is how many times a week. Now, we can't do this all the time. But Shabbos is absolutely necessary in 2017. It's just amazing that people question whether or not it's an old-fashioned idea at this point and whether it should go by the by. Technology has, in many ways, over the last even 5 years, has truly changed religion, families, relationships, and everything else. The ability, and I could talk about the the Tuesday night dinner table and cell phones, but the ability to have time on Shabbos where we actually are able to look at each other and focus on each other is something that has never been needed more than today. I'm not sure what they did in the Middle Ages at 5 p.m. other than look at each other and talk to each other. I'm not really sure. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder what the purpose of Shabbos was then. But in terms of what the purpose of Shabbos is now, it's a liberating experience. We know that in the Kiddush and in through the Aseres HaDibros, Shabbos is compared to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Zecher li Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is Shabbos, what does Shabbos have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? It has to do with Brias HaOlam, Zecher l'Maaseh Breishis. What does it have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? But like Yetzias Mitzrayim, Shabbos is a liberating experience. It is a liberating experience. It's a freedom from work. It's a freedom from the need to achieve. It means so much more in the modern world. And again, we need to explain this to the children and we need to take advantage of it. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes. But it's not just meaning. It's enjoyment. The fact is, many of us like Shabbos because it's just enjoyable time. And we can't forget that that's part of what it is as well. The connecting of a positive feeling for a child or a teenager with Shabbos, and it's true with all things in Yiddishkeit, but the fact that Shabbos, the first thing that comes to mind is something positive, is as important perhaps as any religious message. You could be into Shabbos because of the cholent or because of the herring as much as you could be it. A positive association in the mind of a child. And remember, all children go through stages where they are closer and they feel further away from their parents, from God, from Yiddishkeit. Studies have shown that 16-year-olds are particularly susceptible to finding a distance from God in the religious community, just as 19-year-olds, and it's not because of Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, it's enhanced, it's captured, it may be sometimes pushed even too far by Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, but the brain, the way the brain works, it's not uncommon for a 16-year-old to be really not that interested in learning, in davening, in Shabbos. The need to put positive associations there so that when this individual decides to rethink, whether they rethink it in Eretz Yisrael, whether they rethink it in college, whether they rethink it when they get married, whether they rethink it, please God, when they have children. The fact that that Shabbos has a positive piece to it, that they associate Shabbos with positive feelings, is very critical. So Shabbos has to be a day of all good things. It has to be a day of all good things. Of menucha, of food, of treats. The idea of having certain things only on Shabbos. My family is not one to talk about keeping sugar cereals away or soda away during the week. But there should be treats that are just for Shabbos. Oh, come on, that's Shabbos? Shabbos is about the malachim? No, Shabbos is about, it's about sugar. Shabbos is about sour sticks, right? Sour sticks is Shabbos. I hate to say it, that's the way we work. If there's a positive association, that this is when we get the special treat. I was at a family this Shabbos, had a beautiful thing that they've started to make Shabbos candy. That the parent and one of the kids goes out on Friday and they buy candy that somehow has a hint to something that's in the Parsha. Great idea. And then everybody else has to guess what it is. Right? It should create a very positive, relaxed environment. The Shabbos table, which we'll speak about in just a moment, and davening produce many opportunities to lecture our children, to be upset at our children, to let our children know that they're not living up to the expectations that we have, to let them know that they're not doing the right thing. Shabbos is not the time for discipline. There's a difference between expectations and discipline. Expectations with rewards and discipline. We have to ask ourselves, is it worth creating a negative association for Shabbos? Children are not able to sit for long meals. Children are not able to sit for davening. Adults are not able to sit for davening. It's a problem. It's a problem that shuls need to be aware of. The length of Shabbos meals. It's a big problem in many of our communities. People are too friendly. People are too friendly. It doesn't work for everybody to sit for 3 hours at a meal. And it doesn't have to be 3 hours. And it certainly doesn't work for the kids. But again, and we'll get back to all these ideas, but this idea that Shabbos is not a time to the extent that we can help it for discipline. It has to be a positive experience. We have to let the kids enjoy. If they enjoy Shabbos, they'll want to come back to Shabbos. If Shabbos is a restrictive time for them, and of course it is naturally somewhat restrictive, but if it becomes more restrictive, it becomes a time that they see that their parent is constantly disciplining them, and you're letting me down, you're not doing this, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it, no, 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 no. That may be a bad idea in general, but certainly we don't want to associate that with shul and with Shabbos, two of the most important things that we hope they'll come back to. Perhaps the most important thing is that we have to remember as parents, and that's really what this, much of what we're talking about all through the day today, is our role as parents, that as parents, the biggest commodity that we have to share with our children is ourselves. The biggest commodity that we have to share with our children, the biggest treat that we can give them, the best positive association that we can create with anything is sticking ourselves into it. And it seems so counterintuitive. There was an interesting article this week in New York Times, fascinating way of phrasing it. What do teenagers want? Potted plant parents. Potted plant parents. I don't know if that's flattering or that, what that is. Our children want us to be potted plants. Well, they may have said things to that effect. That I can understand. What does it mean they want us to be potted plants? The studies have shown that children, despite the fact that they don't often want their parents' opinion, they want their parents to be around more often. The same adolescent who laments her parents' absence might only faintly acknowledge their presence when they are in fact home. They want their parents to be there. They don't want their parents to be too on top of them. The idea of presence, of being there. Studies have found that parents who simply sit in the room while their children are doing various activities and simply do their own thing. They're not there to monitor their children. They'll read a book. They'll do whatever it is they're doing in proximity to their children. We know this from a young child. It doesn't change. A young child, a one-year-old, a two-year-old, has a struggle between the need to explore their environment and to have the security of their parents. Guess what? It doesn't go away when you're a teenager. You express it differently, but you have this need to, on the one hand, have the security, the fallback of your parents in case there's something you want to ask them. And that's so frustrating because The last three times we sat down together, you asked me nothing. But the role of the parent is to be there in case, to give the child the security. And you know what? Once in a while, they are going to bring something up. The question is, were we there? One of the ideas of Shabbos, and it's found already in the Torah, whether or not Tchum Shabbos, the idea of walking past a certain place is Midaraisa, Midarabanan, there is certainly a concept of Shabbos, of Al Yetze Mimakomo Biyoma Shabbos. That on Shabbos, we don't leave our place. We don't leave our place. The idea of being home and present on Shabbos. I don't have any tainas against a parent who comes home from a very difficult work week and puts their head down and falls asleep during the Shabbos table. But a tremendous opportunity has been missed. We all like to sleep on Shabbos. I am no different than anybody else. But we're literally, by sleeping on Shabbos, certainly sleeping on a short Shabbos, sleeping on a long Friday night, we're literally missing the most available time to be with our children and to spend quality time, to be with our spouses and to spend quality time. Shabbos is very, very precious time. Everybody is stuck together. Everybody is hopefully, for the most part, off of their devices and present. It means that as parents, we need to take a very, very unselfish view of Shabbos, and we deserve a break. And it is difficult. And it has to, of course, be a balance. But that is the time. It's so I don't really want to talk to us on Shabbos, but they want us to be there and awake and doing something. Shabbos is also one of the few times that we can actually come back to being ourselves. One of the effects of technology, one of the effects of constantly texting and emailing and all this and that, is that we very easily forget who we are and what's really important to us. We're constantly surrounded by buzz. We're very, very, it's very difficult to be able to spend time thinking about who we are and what's important. Everything keeps moving and going and doing. There's no time to think anymore. Shabbos is a time that we have to figure out who we are. You know, there's a very interesting, you'll see at the end of, I don't know if Art Scroll has this, some Siddurim have, at the back of the Siddur, this very strange thing that at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, you're supposed to say a pasuk that begins and ends with the letters of your name. It's a very strange thing, what that's about. It's based on a shalah. The shalah tells us that when we get to the next world, the first question that we're going to be asked is not did you make time for Torah, did you try to have children. It's going to be, okay, what's your name? That's good, right? That's the, you know, if anyone's taking the SATs, we got at least 200 points there. What's your name? This is going to work out well. And the shalah tells us, based on Kabbalistic sources, that people are going to have a very difficult time remembering their name when they get up there. And the skula, I'll explain this in a second, the skula of saying your name again and again at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, this thing is supposed to be a skula. If you say a pasuk, you'll be able to remember that pasuk and remember your name. What's that all about? So we know that Judaism takes naming very seriously. It takes baby naming very seriously. You look at the Chumash and all these parshiyos, the names of the children, we have a concept, the Gemara says, Shema Garim. The name of something has something to do with what it will be and certainly to do with what it is. Hebrew, we believe, is not a name that a random set of letters come together to name something. It somehow describes the essence. Somehow describes the essence. When we get up to the next world, the first question they're going to ask us is, who are you? In the form of, what is your name? Who are you? And you're going to be like, well, I have a 10 o'clock here, I have a 4:30 over there, I got to do, I'm out of coffee, I got to order it. And they'll say, wait a minute, you're dead now. Who are you? Don't define yourself by your calendar. That's not who you are. That's what Shabbos is. This idea of asking real questions, of having meaningful conversations, of trying to remember what it is that we're about. The Shabbos table is an opportunity to sometimes have some of those conversations. You know, it's difficult enough to try to bring some Torah to the table. Okay, and that can be true even if you're the rabbi. It's difficult enough. You're engaged in great conversation. It's interesting. One story, another story. Everything's great. No Lashon Hara. No. Forget about that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you're just having good conversations. But Shabbos table is a time to have meaningful conversations also. Even when we're going through our kids' Parsha questions. Even when they're locked in. I have my 10-year-old. He's actually there and he's reading his Dvar Torah, which I don't understand what the point of it was, because he just was given it and he's just reading it. But he's reading it. We're actually engaged in Talmud Torah. But we're worried about the facts of the Parsha and not the ideas behind the Parsha. We're worried about how many men Esav had with him, rather than asking a question like, what do you think Esav was thinking? What would you have done if you were Yaakov? Instead of just asking factual questions at the table, ask questions that get them to think. Ask questions that they get put moral dilemmas on the table, rather than just a fact question about a medrash on the parsha. What would you do in this situation? Something came up during your week. How would you have handled it? That is a teaching moment. That's a teaching moment. Just to review everything in the parsha is very nice. Get that over with right in the beginning. You could sign after Shabbos that you did their work. But what? Where are we thinking and where are we modeling values? The reality is that more than anything, our children observe the way we are and the way we speak at the Shabbos table. Now I go to the Lashon Hara stuff. Children learn more. We have to always remember this. Children learn more by what they overhear us say than what we say to them. Children learn more from what we overhear them say than what we say directly to them. The way that we speak at our Shabbos table, how often do they really have an hour to sit and observe? And I know you don't think they're observing, because they're talking to their friends, or they're playing on the side, they're observing. Shabbos table is a critical time to show how we accept the opinions of others, how we speak about others. It's not about the isser of Lashon Hara. It's an entire attitude towards other people and towards other opinions and other views that is expressed, that comes up at the Shabbos table. If there's a disagreement at the Shabbos table about anything, let's say, for example, politics, if there's a disagreement at the table and there's a discussion, the way that the parents are able to carry out that discussion and able to respect others' opinions is critical. We spend, I know MPA is such an inexpensive school, but we spend so, nobody left. We spend so much money. We spend so much money trying to educate our children. Isn't it worth? These things are potentially as important or more important than all that we spend on trying to educate our children. The way we are at the Shabbos table. It's difficult. We get to the Shabbos table, we're not exactly sure what to bring up, what to do. Again, we are so busy. And I only say this because we spend so much money and time on our children's formal education. The Shabbos table is probably as important as school. It is so difficult to find 10 minutes to prepare for the Shabbos table. To think of what is the discussion we should have at the Shabbos table. It takes time. Who has time during the week? I get to the Shabbos table, anybody have a Dvar Torah? It's nice to also say that. But we need to have what to say, and it's not just the Abbas. If we want our young ladies, if we want our daughters to take their opinion seriously, the Imas have to have just as much to say. I know it takes time. Who has time to look something up during the week? You know what? We spend so much on our children, but we sometimes forget the role that we play. We are at least as important as the teachers and the administrators. The only thing is, we have this much time, they have this much time, and we need to capitalize. The Shabbos table and the memories that our children have of our Shabbos table, the rituals that we have at our Shabbos table, the songs that we sing at our Shabbos table. You know, Rav Shach Zatzal, Rav Shach had a son who famously went off the derech, he became like Tzioni, became like a Mizrahi. He became a very big professor, so they asked Rav Shach, you know, Nebuch, what happened to his son that he went off the derech? And he responded, but his response is very interesting. His response is that we didn't sing enough Zmiros at the Shabbos table. Rav Shach said that. Now, mind you, we may not have seen what his son did as necessarily going off the derech, but he did decide to take a different path than his father. And he said it was because we didn't sing enough Zmiros at the Shabbos table. It's a very, very interesting comment. We need to script our Shabbos tables. There's one time a year that we're basically told how to do what to do, and that's the Seder. The Seder is the ultimate Shabbos table, and I try to, as well, talk a lot about the importance of the Seder, the importance of preparation for the Seder, but the Seder is the model Shabbos table. That's why I personally... It's wonderful if you can go to a hotel. It's wonderful you can do whatever. I feel that to lose that model of a Shabbos table at the place where I have my Shabbos table is chaval. The Seder is the night when we get it right. When the focus is not on the adults, but on the children. Where we have everything set up. Where the conversation is for the most part about Torah. It's a model Shabbos table. I find that at least I can remember that I can remember we had a Torah conversation right here at this table. We can do that. So the importance of that is critical. The ability of being alone with our family, we always have to create a balance between guests and our family and our family's needs. And certainly as a shul rabbi, I understand that as much as anyone. And I think it was only after years of doing this that we began to spend less time inviting and making sure that we had more time to try to have at least, as a shul rabbi, one of the two meals every Shabbos, just the family. Just the family. It's very meaningful. First of all, it's very meaningful as a statement. We all like to socialize, and we all like to do achnasas orchem. Having guests on Shabbos is a wonderful thing. But it's very difficult to have guests and to focus on our children. And we have to make decisions. If Shabbos is the key moment for chinuch for our children, more key perhaps than Monday to Friday, and if the Shabbos meal may be the most important place to give over values and ideas and joy for Yiddishkeit, then we have to ask ourselves, what do we lose when we try to do other things? It's a very interesting thing. Where do our children sit when guests come? Where do our children sit? The natural thing is to sit the children at the other end of the table because the adults want to talk to the adults and the children want to talk to the children, and that sends a very powerful message to the children. It also pretty much guarantees that the children are not going to be in on the conversation. Sometimes we wouldn't want them in on the conversation. So why are we doing that in the classroom of life? And the most important classroom they have is the Shabbos table. Why are we talking about that at the Shabbos table? The message of putting my children next to me, no matter how important the guests may be, sends a very powerful message. The famous story of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman telling his guests, very chush of a guest, on every Shabbos, it's now time, I have to spend time with my children. Shabbos is for the children. Shabbos is not for the guests. Those are very, very powerful messages that we can send. The problem is that every Shabbos goes by and we don't do it. Right? We have to really work. We have to work as couples. We have to work in our minds to try to say, yes, we're really going to do this Shabbos. The meal's not going to stretch out for 3 hours. It's not going to do that. What time is it? Is that just the regular MTA meal? What? 12:30. So we have a few more minutes. Just a few more thoughts. Shul. Oy. Shul is very much the same thing as the Shabbos table. If shul is meaningful to us and important to us, then there's a good chance that it'll be important and meaningful to the children. Let's remember, shul is much easier to eat than to daven. The ability of children to get into shul, especially on Shabbos when davening is so long, it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. Whoa, 10. Excellent. Okay. The ability for children to get into Shabbos davening, any davening, is very, very difficult. First of all, we have to understand that tefillah is a very profound experience. It's a very profound theological experience. It's very difficult for any child to daven. It simply is. Sometimes I'll see someone come back from Eretz Yisrael, and they'll be in the men's section, or more often in the women's section, and they're like, really? I mean, wow. I mean, there is major stuff going on there, and it's beautiful, and it's hopefully a good sign for the future. But I ask myself sometimes, what are they praying so hard about? They don't have elderly parents. They don't have kids who are sick or going off the derech. They don't even have a mortgage to pay. What are they davening for? Do they really want the Yeshua that bad? Baruch Hashem? The fact is, tefillah is something that comes. I've heard people say, and I've said it myself, tefillah is something a person comes to in their 30s. Meaningful tefillah is something that a person comes to in their 30s. To model tefillah, one can do at a much younger age. But to really daven, to really feel like I had all these dreams and there were all these things that I want, and I realize I can't have everything and I can't do everything, and I really need your help. That's not even a 20s experience, never mind a teenager's experience. So we have to realize that tefillah is difficult for kids. We have to have reasonable expectations. We have to make those expectations known. But we have to have reasonable expectations. A 10-year-old simply is not going to sit in shul the whole time. Sometimes, because of peer pressure, we're able to create some of that. That's great. But we have to be reasonable in terms of what it is that people can do in terms of shul. Shul is very long. When I speak to Rabbanim and I try to train the future Rabbanim, we have to keep Shabbos morning simply shorter. It's just too long. We're talking about people who have 5-minute attention spans, and then suddenly they have a 3-hour experience in the morning. The attention spans have probably gotten a lot shorter. But regardless of that, it's what it is. It's what it is. We simply can't do that. We're going to need at some point to really rethink the Shabbos morning davening to figure out how to make this something that works for people. But if we enjoy tefillah, if we ask our children to simply be with us. Now, again, another issue is the issue of teen minyanim and things like that. Why did teen minyanim start? Teen minyanim start because it was the attempt of the rabbi and the shul to take the kids away from the adults so that they wouldn't learn the bad practices of their parents. That's what it was. It was an opportunity to reach out. Yes, you do learn how to daven for the amud, and there is a nice social pressure, but while I'm not saying we shouldn't have youth minyanim and teen minyanim, we also have to balance the value of parents sitting next to their children during davening. That is lost, and there is something lost there. It could mean that not every single week there is a teen minyan. It could be that the parents daven with the kids in the teen minyan. If you want to daven in one place and your teen wants to daven somewhere else, daven with your teen. It's that important. It's a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice. But again, we make so many sacrifices for our kids. Of course, if we plan on modeling bad behavior during davening, then you might as well send the kid to a different minyan. But the ability to see that for a parent it's meaningful, is a very, very important thing. Tefillah is supposed to be difficult. There's a Yerushalmi I shared recently in a course I'm giving on tefillah. Is a Yerushalmi that speaks of the Amoraim and their difficulty in davening. You have serious Amoraim talking about the fact that they count the books on the shelf during davening, they're looking out at the birds. You know, it is supposed to be difficult. We start every tefillah with a tefillah that we should be able to daven. Hashem svasai tiftach ufi agi tilasecha. So we start by davening and say, help me daven. It's not easy. And it's especially difficult for young people. So we need to have patience. It can't become a power struggle. But the extent to which they see that we enjoy tefillah and we value tefillah, we're simply putting things in the back of their minds. Now it's not important to me, but it will be important to that child at a certain point. Finally, and then I'll take a question or two. Finally, there is the need to daven for our children. I know that sounds a little surprising. Sometimes we forget to daven for the things that are most important. And as with everything, the hatzlacha that we can have with our children is only through the Ribono Shel Olam. There's probably no other area that we feel as much like, I don't know how to bring from point A to point B, how do you get them to the finish line, than in terms of bringing up children. And it is appropriate and it is necessary to mouth the words and to daven for our children. By the way, it changes us when we daven for our children. If we daven, whether it's in Shema Kolenu, whether it's at the end of our Shmoneh Esrei, whether it's in our own words, to daven for the success of our children, and it's not so bad if once in a while they hear it too. One of the most beautiful practices of the Shabbos table is the Birchas Habanim, is to be able to give brachos, and in my family I do it, and my wife does it. We each give a bracha to every one of the children. And what I try to do is not simply to say the regular text alone, the regular very short text alone. It's, by the way, it's a very, very powerful moment with every one of the children quiet. It only takes a few seconds. It's a very, very powerful moment. But once in a while, I'll tell you a secret, I also say in my own words, I give them a little bit of a sense of what I wish for them and I hope for them. And they hear that. Good. I hope this week, I know my son is struggling with tefillah as a 10-year-old. I hope this week that you'll find it a little easier to daven. Okay? I hope Hashem should help you. Hashem should help you to work out that problem in your class today. Hashem should allow you to become a Talmud Chacham. Hashem should give you inspiration. Those tefillos, which are said silently, but whispered into our children's ears, are very, very powerful. So I know that for me, this is certainly trying to put these ideas together and speaking to so many has certainly reminded me on the one hand of things that I haven't been doing, but also has certainly inspired me to use Shabbos. As I said, I think the key to the entire thing is to understand that Shabbos is critical. It's critical. It's our time, but it's really the time that we can give to our children. And although we can't guarantee success with our children, the more that we give of ourselves, and the more we show our love for Yiddishkeit and Shabbos to our children on Shabbos, the better shot we'll have of success in a very difficult world. Any questions, comments, good ideas? Can we at least get one good idea from something somebody's doing at home that they could share? Somebody, yes?
Okay, I'm doing it for the
yeah. Okay. Right. We used to do that too. We used to have two siddurim with many, many, many guests of the rabbi and rebbetzin of the shul and everything. And we do it backwards, but we do the same thing. We always make sure that at least one seder is just them. And it's actually, I feel, is a good balance, because one seder, they get to see the outreach. They get to see the chesed. The rabbi's seder on Pesach is often really many people who don't have where to be. And it gives us the opportunity to talk in a simple way about emunah ideas that are probably best discussed simply, because otherwise, like, too big shot to talk about it. All the fancy Divrei Torah the second night with the kids, the first night we talk about the fact that there's a God and he's involved in our lives, and all the real important messages come out on the first night. But then we have the second night, because if not, how could we have a Seder without our kids? How could they not be at the front? How could they not be the ones who get the floor? It's hard, Rabbi Osei. Please don't see this as something that I've been able to accomplish on a ongoing basis. But I think that the idea is certainly true, and the more we could do this, the more we'll help our children. Hatzlach, everybody, and Freilich and Chanukah.
This is really from Len Grunstein. Mm-hmm. He was working like a dog for so many years. Clients were not religious or not Jewish. Mm-hmm. Many of them would come and say, I want to come to your house. I want to have dinner. I want to see what it's like. And I said to him, Len, this is what you're going to do. There will never be any room. Our children will not look up to as a role model around our mm-hmm. table. You have to deal with them mm-hmm. outside the house. I will not break bread. Because you bring these people in, and the kids look and go, then they're going to look at them and say, guess what? After the kids were out of the house one time, it was a non-Jew.
Hi, how are you?
Uh-huh. And the only one we had was an African. I had to call neighbors, bring in a bottle of wine. I can't open a wine.
It's impressive. That's
right. Well, I'm happy.
Rabbi Trenner, you're no longer.